Radio Gorgeous, where women do the talking. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous. My name is Josephine Pembroke. And welcome back, Miss Donna Free.
Hello, I'm back.
It's such good news. Now, this week on Gorgeous Gossip, we're going to talk about both of us have new mobiles.
Well, there's been a lot less calls between
us. Yeah, exactly. And we're going to talk about the stress, the strains, and the tribulations, and the joy of getting new technology into our lives. We've also got the 1600s Guide to the Sexes, which we're going to be looking at. But first of all, my darling, who, pray tell, is Author of the Week?
You interviewed the Author of the Week.
Yes, I did.
Yes. So you tell us.
Okay. Lucky you reminded me. No, she's absolutely amazing. She's called Emma Donoghue, and she's famous for a book called Room, which is all about... All about the Austrian man who kept the women underneath.
Yes, it was a really, really great book.
She has been a novelist since she was 23, and she's now in her late 40s. She's always been a writer. And anyway, so she wrote this book, Room, and it was shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize, and it was shortlisted for the Orange Prize. So I was so nervous about interviewing her, because I thought, oh my God, she's going to be so brainy. But she's absolutely, well, she is brainy, but completely charming, put me at ease, which is more important than anything else.
Well, glad you were comfortable.
Exactly, I was comfortable.
Let's talk about what's important here.
Exactly. I was comfortable, and she'd just come straight from the night before the launch of her new book, which is called Frog Music. And it was set in a burlesque club because the theme is about kind of strippers and prostitutes and everything in 1860s San Francisco.
Wow, what a departure from her last book. Oh, how fantastic.
Exactly.
Oh, so you're going to
have to
read it.
Exactly. Yeah. You're going to have to read that. Now, we've also got an academic on, which who you interviewed.
Oh, my God. She was amazing. Professor Joan Breton Connolly. I want to be her when I grow up.
Yeah.
She is an anthropologist and she teaches anthropology at NYU. So she spends, you know, the fall living in New York and being fabulous. And then she spends her summers on a dig in a Greek Cypriot island. So, and she has put forth, it's such an exciting story. I mean, it could be Dan Brown. It could be, you know.
So is it fiction or is it?
No, she has, you know. Okay, let's get the controversy going here. The Elgin Marbles.
Yeah.
But they are the frieze around the Parthenon. And they
That's where we stole them from. Yeah.
Yes, they traditionally have been thought to tell one story. Mm-hmm. However, she has uncovered a sort of a play that was once lost, that was in mummy wrappings. I mean, it just doesn't get better. It's so Indiana Jones. Yeah. It's fantastic. And it's true and it's real.
So
and she's amazing.
So two stories.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she's put forth another theory of what the frieze represents.
And does she tell us?
Yes. And it's really great. And everyone, you know, all the academics are sort of saying, oh, right. Oh, I think we
and
think
does
she's
think,
right.
And does she think the marbles should be returned to Greece?
Yes, I mean, it would be lovely to read them all at once.
I think we should give them back.
You know, I mean, it's...
Especially since they're priceless and they're not owned by us. But anyway,
and that's... wouldn't it be amazing to see them all together, especially in light of this theory of what it represents? Yeah. It would be amazing to see them all in one place.
Now, the next person we've got on is Travel. Sarah Tucker's back.
Sarah's back. But she's never here. She's always traveling.
I know, and she'd just come back from a retreat, actually.
Ah.
And so we talked about what is a retreat. It can be from a spa to something much more Spartan. Radio Gorgeous, we are your new best friend. So I'm here with Sarah Tucker, who's our Gorgeous Escapes spokeswoman.
Hello,
now,
how are you?
Why have you had to come here early?
I'm off to the BBC after this, because recently I've been talking to quite a few people, TV and radio stations, but this is radio stations in this particular case, about why prices are risen so much during school holidays. And a lot of travel companies have been heavily criticised about raising their prices. And I'm, I suppose, hopefully the voice of reason explaining explaining why it happens, that the fact that it's not because they're greedy. I think other industries, possibly it's the case. The travel industry has such narrow profit margins. It's the only way that they can make their money. So it's nothing to do with greed. It's all to do with necessity.
Isn't it also supply and demand? I mean, I've got a holiday cottage I rent out and it's more expensive than holidays because more people want it.
Exactly. So, you know, it's a business. And I think also people have a different attitude towards the travel industry, even people within the industry itself, because it is fun. It is to do with joy and giving pleasure. And it's fun to work in. And I think consequently people think, oh, they should just do it for nothing. But it's simply not the case. It's a business. When there's more demand than there is supply, the prices are going to go up. And it is as simple as that. And I just think it's very unfortunate that, yes, it does hit those families who have only got limited time, limited budget, and don't have the, you know, the joy of, you know, either going frequently for lots of short breaks or taking time out of school. So I think that's why this is such a big issue.
Isn't it illegal as well to take your child out? Can you go to prison and things now?
There's that. Although there was one particular case where a ski operator has offered to pay the fine that the school will impose if the child is taken out of school during school term time. So, you know, people are finding ways around it. I myself, like, I've taken my son out of school during school term time, but obviously I've advised the school and I've explained the particular situation. It hasn't been because of, you know, like a sand and sea destination. It's been because it's, you know, been to Ecuador, I've been writing for National Geographic. So I think they're seeing it more as an educational trip, but I certainly wouldn't, if you like, abuse that and go out all the time during school breaks. I also feel he's coming up to GCSEs now, so it's important that he doesn't miss any school term time. I think what it is that, especially if you've got younger children where...
We all did it when they were little.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I think, so when they're older, I think it's more important that they're in school every day. But I certainly think when they're younger and they have that opportunity, and I remember I took Tom on safari when he was about 6 or 7, and I got him to write a safari diary, which was a painful process because he didn't like writing at the best of times. But he brought it back and he made a little presentation to his class.
Now, that's a really interesting subject, and I'm sure we'll get a lot of response to that. Now, what have you come in to talk about today, apart from schools?
Ah, retreats. Retreats, yes. It's
that one... word's good, isn't it?
Well, I've been talking to quite a few people about the whole concept of retreats, because a retreat is actually not... It's not technically correct, because you rather confront things in a retreat rather than retreat from them. I suppose you're taking yourself away from everybody else, but you're, in most particular retreats, you're actually confronting your issues, whether they're, I don't know, bereavement or loss or heartbreak or the fact you're too fat or too thin or something. There's an issue somewhere, and most people tend to go to retreats for... A variety. I've found a variety of reasons in my research, whether it's a midlife crisis. In fact, I think the world seems to be having a midlife crisis. It's not just a case of, you know, you've got to be sort of like late 40s. There's people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. And it's not women, it's men are having it just as bad, and they're wanting direction, to seek direction. And they feel that these retreats, whether you go to a yoga retreat or an ashram or somewhere hippie in California or up a mountain in Austria, that they will find the answer.
So do they advertise as retreats? Is that the word you'd be looking for?
I think retreats is the one, but it is a big coverall for things, because a lot of spas sometimes call themselves retreats. They're very cosmetic. They deal with the external rather than the internal or the spiritual. I think really the word is holistic, and that's it's the inside and the out, which includes everything from Reiki to aromatherapy to spiritual healing to all those things that, you know, some of the things might leave you a little bit cold, you know, when it gets into what I call the rainbow and unicorn and butterfly territory, where everything's a little bit too on your feminine side. And I think this is why some people prefer the Northern European and the German type retreats, which are almost clinical. natural, you know, medicinal in, in the way that they treat things. And they use things like computers to identify, you know, whether you have issues with your gallbladder, which may be to do with the fact that, I don't know, you could have caught parasites when you went to on a trip to Africa, which is actually quite common, or you could have anger issues, because that's where you tend to hold a lot of anger issues in your gallbladder. I think there's now more and more retreats dealing with a whole lot of issues that, quite frankly, the National Health Service and our GPs do not have the time or the funds or the knowledge to deal with. One of the things that came back when I was doing the research was that a lot of GPs now refer people to alternative practitioners who are frequently, you know, staff at retreats. I teach yoga myself, and I've got my own retreat in France. Can I mention my website?
Seems you're on the radio.
I seem on the radio. It's a2zenofyoga.com, a2zenofyoga.com. And I found that people who come to the yoga classes, they may have issues with their knee or their hip or their shoulders. But it's all to do with emotional issues that they haven't dealt with, which has led to mental issues, which has led to physical issues. And retreats, if you pick the right one, and that is the key, do help. I think the key to finding a good retreat.
What does spiritual healing mean then? Because I think that's really what people are after, isn't it?
I think spiritual healings means different things to different people. I think when you go to a spiritual healer, and I've been to a few spiritual healers, sometimes they use an element of clairvoyancy. So if you're unable to articulate why you're feeling in a certain way, they will use, sometimes they call it intuitive counselling. They will tell you, or they will allow you to open up and enable you to recognise for yourself why you are feeling in a certain way. Sometimes you're in a situation where for the first time they're in a room with someone they can trust, and consequently that leads to, you know, tears, lots and lots of tears. But it is essentially, and sometimes with spiritual healers, they do the laying on of hands. So it's literally healing, taking away the negative and helping them with the positive energy. I think all spiritual healers behave in very, very different ways. And I think, again, it's finding, just like it's finding the right retreat for you, it's like finding the right healer for you. The thing is to remember when you're going to a specific retreat is to, first of all, have a look at the people there who teach there. Do due diligence on them. If there's a lot of people who like specific yoga teachers, will follow those yoga teachers wherever they go, be it Austria or Ibiza or California. They will just go to that person. So the location is irrelevant, because really the teacher has chosen the location already for them as being a good, strong, energetic location. Same with the other sort of practitioners. Healers, you don't have to go to some extremely expensive, exotic retreat of Kuala Lumpur, you know, an island all by itself, to find, you know, a spiritual healer that will work for you. You know, one may be in Romford in Essex. It is absolutely nothing to do with location. It's all to do with the people involved there. And I think most people who have been on any sort of retreats will tell you that there is obviously location is important, but it's the people you're going to meet there and the people who are going to heal you.
Could you chat to them before on the phone, or what would you do?
I think the best way to do it is always via word of mouth. And again, it's a bit like counselling too. What may work for one person may not work for you. That's it's a bit like trying on a dress or trying on a pair of trousers. There's no fun for all the family. It, you know, one size fits all. It doesn't. What it is good to do is contact the retreat and explain your needs, where you are, whether you've done anything before like this, whether you have had counselling, whether you have been to a healer. And also, if you're going to one already, or if you're going to a yoga class already, ask your teacher. But I think with something like this, rather than seeing an advertisement for it, it is very much word of mouth and trusting your intuition as well, because it will always lead you down the right way.
Sarah, fantastic to have you on today. Could you give us a list of retreats and we'll put them on the website that you personally advise?
I will. I will give you the list of the retreats. They will be very, very different. As I said, they will be mainly to do with people who I know are authentic. I think this is really what people are looking for when they go to retreats. But the key thing is to choose the person. The location will follow. It's the person that you follow.
RadioGorgeous.com. I got a new iPhone this week.
And I've got Samsung.
Is that like the same thing?
Oh, yeah.
They're massively big screens and they're this awful touchscreen thing because we loved our BlackBerrys, didn't we?
I know. And my son had to tell me how to answer my phone because no amount of jabbing and cursing would make it answer.
Exactly.
And I was like, oh, it was so frustrating. But yes, the 9-year-old told me how to answer my phone.
And the other day, I didn't know how to make a new call. And so I screamed and my daughter had to come in and I threw it across the room and I said, I am going back to BlackBerry. And then that night I was going back to BlackBerry and And the next day I calmed myself down and said, no, this apparently, because I've just read this book on hypnotherapy, the woman's going to be on soon, trying out new things is good for your brain, but it's not good for your stress levels.
But I also, have you seen my phone? It's massive.
Yeah, it's
I
like feel a like bloody telly.
I know. I feel like an old person, you know, so you can't see. You just have to have everything really big. You know?
So what can you do on it so far?
I've learned how to answer it. So, okay. So that's
something.
Can
you send a text?
I can.
But you've got to use your fingers.
I hate that jabbing thing.
Yeah. But what's annoying with me is I do loads of kisses to people and it always comes out as what's the one after X?
Why?
Zeds. I'm sending loads of Zeds so people think I'm constantly asleep. But the only good thing I found out about my iPhone is you can talk. Text messages.
I've got to look into that. I think I can do that with mine as well.
And it's so good. You only get about one wrong word, you know, like.
Which you do when you text anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. As long as it's not obscene, you know. Anyway, but we'll let you know. And we also want to hear from you how stressful it is for you to get new things into your life. Now, a newspaper last week.
Yes.
This is the 1600s Guide to the Sexes. So this is an early forerunner to the famous Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus. And the book is called The Art How to Know Men, Known Men, was written in 1665 and it was translated from the French. And it compares the male form to a lion with large mouths, thick hair and hard, muscular flesh. Bring him on. But women have a fair appearance which hides an infinite multitude of defects. Weakness, jealousy, distrust, and ungratefulness. What do you think of that?
I think, same old, same old.
So it hasn't changed, really?
No, you know, it's idiotic.
Yeah, men still project everything, all their bad feelings onto a woman.
And why are they even bringing it up in the newspaper? Are they bringing it up, you know, are they saying, you know...
It did cause a Twitter storm, that's why. And it was found in a... It's just been found.
Has it just been found?
Yeah, okay. 350 years later. In Dorset, actually. in a lady's...
The Purbeck Coast?
Yeah, ladies' attic. While men were built with heat and drought, women received a little more cold and moisture. That's what we're made of.
Oh, cold and moisture. Clammy.
I'd say we're more hot and moist, wouldn't you?
Okay, that could get into a whole
now,
thing.
Now, Davis goes on to describe the other physical differences between the two genders. He describes women as being lower and smaller.
Which, you know
yes, generally
for the
we
most
are. Time, yeah, I mean, I'm not lower.
Smaller, perhaps.
Petite compared to a man. And our eyes are large and black, unless I'm tripping, they're not. Betraying a certain mildness and modesty. Oh.
Makes you sound like a cow.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's not surprising at that time. I mean, and we get those stereotypes, you know, they're there for a reason.
But I don't think we're probably as learned as then.
I remember reading an article by Bella Freud a couple of years ago, and she was talking about, you know, she was at this dinner party and all these older people, you know, were sitting there saying, you know, they remembered, you know, in great detail stories that had happened and who was involved and who was in politics at the time. And, you know, all these surrounding details, you know, where she was saying, oh, you know, the person, you know, you know, and like, I'll Google it later when I get home, you know, and everyone just Googles it. And then we don't have the same memory as, you know, it's not as developed, you know, I guess.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah. Now, I just heard a very annoying whistling noise.
Oh, yeah, that's my phone tweeting away.
Is that what it means?
Yes, I don't know. And it really annoys me because it always sounds to me like that McDonald's chime.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production for Radio Gorgeous 2014. As anything rattles your cage, if it has, get in touch. info@radiogorgeous.com.
Somewhere over the rainbow, skies are blue, and the dreams that you dare to dream really do come true. Someday I'll wish upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind me, where troubles melt like lemon drops away above the chimney tops. That's where